The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk TNT.
All right, welcome to State of the Nation. I'm Brian McClain, broadcasting live out of Central Texas, right here for today's News Talk TNT, and I'm joined by Timothy Shea. He's in New York. Timothy, welcome to State of the Nation.
Welcome, Brian. You got to work on that all right, all right. Now, it's got to be three all rights, and it's got to be all right, all right, all right.
Hey, I want to try to start with some energy. If you get me in that mode, hey, it gets real slow around here real quick. But yeah, man, we got a lot to cover today. A lot of stuff's happened since we dropped the mics on Friday. But this one, I really want to get to right out of the gates. It's urgent. This has been posted by Elizabeth Goldstein on her X.com and boosted by Edward Snowden. Edward says, please read this thread. We have just days to convince the Senate not to pass a terrifying law that will force U.S. businesses to serve as NSA spies. Call your senators now. So what this is about is buried in Section 702 of the RISAA reauthorization passed by the House on Friday, is the biggest expansion of domestic surveillance since the Patriot Act. Senator Wyden calls this power terrifying, and he's right. She goes on to say, I'll explain how this power works. Under current law, the government can compel electronic communications service providers that have direct access to communications to assist the NSA in conducting Section 702 surveillance. In practice, this means companies like Verizon and Google must turn over the communications of targets of 702 surveillance. And of course, you know, they throw in there in brackets, the targets must be foreign overseas, although the communications can and do include communications with Americans. So Timothy, this goes on and it could apply to a VPN service or perhaps one's employer, the coffee shop that they're at, your very service provider, your home ISP, your phone, Verizon, Google, all that stuff. So this thing has mushroomed into, as we're learning more about it, just one day, I think, before it goes to the Senate, it looks worse and worse.
Sure, your commercial landlord, if you're a law firm, it just goes on and on and on. And moreover, Brian, they're under a gag order. They will be under a gag order with severe criminal penalties if they tell the target that they're being surveilled with the assistance of their commercial landlord or the coffee shop or whoever it is. This is absolutely outrageous. I'm encouraged by the fact that Senator Wyden thinks this is terrifying. Yeah. Maybe there's hope that it won't pass the Senate. Every single Republican needs to vote no on this right now, because we are well past the days in this country, Brian, where we just give the government power and then take their word that they're not going to use it against us.
Yeah, I mean, it's so sweeping. Here, check this part out. The amendment even extends to service providers who come into our homes, house cleaners, plumbers, people performing repairs, and IT service providers have access to laptops and routers inside our homes and could be forced to serve as surrogate spies. So I don't know if that would be like a formal sort of setup with someone like that, or if it's just
Brian,
a matter
it's straight
of
out
mass
of,
surveillance.
It's straight out of a movie, right? What they'll do is they'll get the janitor that works in the building and they'll find his brother sold some weed or there's some leverage that they have over him. And they'll say, all you have to do is just download this software and just put this thumb drive into this certain computer and pull it back out after it reaches 100% and you're good with us. That's literally what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so odious. She says the Senate must stop this train before it's too late. The Senate is scheduled to vote on the House passed bill this week. If there's an opportunity to remove these provisions, senators should remove it. If not, they should vote against the bill. Absolutely. And as one more thing I want to throw out here, if you work at a U.S. tech firm, this could transform your whole company into a spy machine. So I would argue they already are that. But yeah, this could formalize it, Timothy.
Well, maybe this is what it's going to take to get techies to stop voting for Democrats.
Hey, all right. Well, I would hope there'd be a lot of people quitting those jobs in the wake of this egregious Fourth Amendment violation here that we're talking about. Hey, why not give TNT a follow? We're on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, X, Instagram, Gab, Gitter, all the others. So help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk TNT.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, so the Trump hush money trial begins in New York City with jury selection, and joining us now to discuss is our friend Andrew Langer. Andrew, welcome back to State of the Nation. It's great to see you here. So here we go. We're off into a new adventure here. Jury
Can we
selection.
actually, before we move into Trump, can we circle back on this piece of legislation you guys are
Yeah,
just
what do you
talking
think?
about?
Yeah, for
I
sure.
mean it's a situation in which I have a basic precept that I operate under, that which the government cannot do directly because of the Constitution's constraints on government power, they can't do indirectly through some kind of weird machination. And Brian and Tim, you're both right that we're already living in an era in which there is much too much interplay between big tech and the intelligence and law enforcement world, that they're peering in to all aspects of our lives. Now, the idea that someone who you give permission to enter your house, into can somehow be deputized in some kind of extra legal spying on you is fundamentally galling to me. But again, galling in the same way that all these things are. And again, before we get to talk about Trump and hush money, because there
Well,
are, sorry, go ahead, Tim.
a friend of mine once said that I had trust issues. I said, I don't have trust issues. I don't trust anybody, including myself. And it turns out I was a cockeyed optimist, right?
Well, you remember
Just
the
because
story.
You're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get us,
Oh my
Andrew.
God, 100%. Boy, oh boy, that's a phrase I use quite a bit. I remember the who was it? Who was the CBS reporter who was literally watching her files and her text get deleted in
Oh,
front of her?
Atkinson, Cheryl Atkinson.
Cheryl Atkinson. And we so folks sort of looked and they scoffed at these kinds of things, and yet this is where we are. And so there are a whole host of proceedings going on at the FCC right now in the name of net neutrality. They want to go out there, and one of the, remember part of the reason why they've reborn resurrected the Obama era. I'm sorry, let me be really clear about this. A lot of folks are thinking that the FCC merely resurrected the Obama-era net neutrality rules last week or is trying to resurrect those. No, this goes much further because, again, right, in the name of national security, right, we want to go after misinformation and disinformation. We want to be able to deputize people to go into people's houses again, access to their computers directly. Well, in the name of national security, right, they want to push people onto municipal broadband, government-run broadband services, right? Think about this, guys. At the very least, if you are dealing with a private internet service provider, there is some level. There's supposed to be some level, some wall between the government and that internet service provider. But if you are getting your internet from your local government, that's gone, right? That there is no expectation of privacy in that point. And so this is there are a whole bunch of things that the FCC is doing right now. They're trying to push people into municipal broadband. We don't have to go down that rabbit hole today. But I am so thoroughly disturbed by the news story you guys just brought up. This is a critical juncture for America right now.
Yeah, it
Didn't
really
mean to
is.
silence you guys.
No. I had to think about that for a second, because I'm disgusted with our conservatives. How does this pass? How does this pass as muster for and representation for anyone in their constituencies? It's ridiculous.
Well, and especially in light of the fact that we know, right, it's one of those things where we can talk about, executive branch power and the problem of an executive branch power and an executive branch that can reach into every aspect of your life, right? It's Lavrenti Beria, right? That's right. It again, it gets into what you guys were talking about in terms of being able to put pressure on folks to spy. But you know, what we are dealing with in these instances are situations in which on a whole host of levels. Oh, I'm sorry. The point is about conservatives. The only answer is to shrink the size and scope of federal power. That's the only way you get at the issue of abusing power. And yet,
well, that's what I've been arguing for years, is that we need to reduce the size of the federal government by at least a third. But ultimately, right, Andrew, it comes down to the Republican. It comes down to the registered Republicans that voted for the 65 Republicans that voted for this bill. OK, right, they weren't conservatives. They were 65 Liz Cheney rhino types, and all 65 need to be tossed. The problem, right, is the voters in their district continuing to vote for the laundry. Oh, he's got an R after his name. Oh, I recognize his name. Oh, I'm going to reelect her. That's the real problem. You know, it's we have like seen the line, we have met the enemy, and he is us.
He is us. That's right. It's like the line from the movie The American President. You know, they're going to vote for you because, you know, he's a nice guy and he looks good in a suit and he's done slightly better than his predecessor. That's the thing. We have to demand more of our legislators than they're doing, either A, slightly better than the other guy, or better than their predecessors. Which, right, leads us to Donald Trump and the hush money trial.
Right, of course. But that's all contingent on a lot of things upstream of the voter actually going in and ticking that box, you know, and that goes all the way back to the way the RNC is structured, the way campaigning, mm-hmm, is structured. And then there's all the vulnerabilities, which we've discussed ad nauseum over the last 4 years. But at any rate, Andrew, what do you think about the hush money trial? They're saying Trump's going to have to be in court a lot when he's supposed to be campaigning. Some people are calling that election interference. What do you think?
Well, I mean, listen, we can make that case that and other folks are making that case that is election interference. This was always the problem with these lawsuits. That's always been the goal of keeping Donald Trump in court. I'm not entirely sure that keeping Trump in the courtroom has a lot of impact on the campaign, insofar as, you know, it keeps Donald Trump's name in the news and the case can be made to everybody. Hey, listen, right? The guy's not out there talking about the issues because the Democrats are using lawfare to keep him sitting in that courtroom. I'm not so sure that it necessarily hurts him in quite the way that the Democrats want them to. Go ahead, Tim.
No, but it is, they're doing it for two reasons, right? They're doing it, number one, to physically fatigue him. It yeah, takes, believe it or not, it takes an awful lot of mental and physical stamina to sit in a courtroom 8 hours a day, especially when you're on the wrong side of the V. But more than that, they're doing it to get under his skin. They're doing it to annoy him. Okay, so the real interesting question here, Andrew, is whether he calls the judge's bluff and attends Barron's high school graduation. Judge said he's going to hold him in criminal contempt, throw him in jail if he goes to Barron's graduation. Does he go to Barron's graduation and call the judge's bluff and risk jail and become a martyr where every parent in America is going to vote for him in November? Or does he show respect for the system and comply?
That's a really interesting question. Tim, what's the downside to him? What's the downside to him going to his son's graduation? I don't see any downside to that.
I don't see any downside. That's what I'm saying. Right. It's going to be interesting to see what decision he takes.
I think I would be very surprised if he complied with the judge's order. I mean, that's the thing. In the end, and I'm sure his attorneys, right, are going to go down this road and say, yeah, I don't think you need to comply with this order. I mean, in the end, I mean, so much of this is such extraordinary behavior on the part of the judiciary in terms of the orders that they're giving him, you know, orders that they give very few defendants in terms of how they can conduct themselves in public. But then again, this is, you know, we've never, this is uncharted territory, having a former president who's running for re-election facing all of these legal challenges at the same time.
Yeah, it really is. We've never seen anything like it before. No. I guess we're saying that on the tail end, on the right bookend of many stories these days. Wow, we've never seen anything like this before. So right. This one clearly falls right in that realm. Andrew, we're just about out of time here. I want to make sure that you know that you can follow Andrew on x.com at Andrew_Langer. And of course, you want to check out the Lunch Hour podcast and Andrew and Jerry Save the World. Andrew, any final thoughts before we have to let you go?
Listen, great episode of the Lunch Hour this week. I talked to Ben Lieberman from the Competitive Enterprise Institute about the double standards that China faces with regards to things like environmental policy and how it helps them and why we need to stop this. So go and check out this week's Lunch Hour.
All right. Excellent. Andrew Langer, thanks for everything you do here at State of the Nation. We appreciate you and we'll see you next time. Stay tuned. Guys. We got more coming up for you right here on today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Lembit Opik.
The risk of an all-out Middle East war is increasing as the crisis in Gaza grows ever more desperate. This is an interesting story because, first of all, I do agree there's a great volatility in the Middle East now. And secondly, because there's a lot of death. What I disagree with is that it's got worse. Perhaps some of the Western supporters of Benjamin Netanyahu have finally woken up to the fact that whatever you think of the original October the 7th attack in Israel, the response has been disproportionate from the very beginning. The overwhelming majority of people who died in Gaza are innocents, men, women, and children who are not combatants and have no intention of being combatants.
Lipid, Opec. And today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
I'm Sandra, this is Jorge, and we were adopted in 2019. I remember when they first came to us, Michael was already a teenager. The whole cliche of, they're so lucky to have you guys, and it's the other way around. They have changed our family for the better. They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Rejoining State of the Nation from the United Kingdom, two nations separated by a common tongue, is our intrepid correspondent, Basil Valentine. Welcome back to State of the Nation, Basil.
Good evening, gentlemen. Great to be with you, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world.
Basil, Rishi Sunak, is he going to be supported should an election be called? I'm hearing an awful lot of dissatisfaction from Britons.
Well, he won't be supported by me, I can tell you that much. And he's not supported by the most of his own party. He is underwater, well and truly, -27.6. Favorability versus unfavorability amongst his own party supporters and members. So if he had a little bit more time, then the Tory party would get rid of him before the next election. It is, after all, the most successful political organization in the history of modern times anywhere ever. And one of the reasons why it's been so successful and formed the government of Great Britain and Northern Ireland for century after century is that it knows when a leader is unpopular and it gets rid of him. And he is an albatross around their neck. Nobody's taking him seriously anymore. And that's always a very bad sign. His performances in the House of Commons have been very disappointing. He doesn't have anything original to say. Apparently, there are very petulant scenes at number 10. Never a good sign with him lashing out at aides in fits of anger. You know, the storm clouds are gathering around number 10. And all he can hope for is that there's some miraculous upturn in the economy between now and the autumn.
It's fascinating to most Americans because we have regularly scheduled elections every 4 years, first Tuesday of November. We all know when they're going to be held. In the United Kingdom, it's a little bit different. And what's even more fascinating to us is that your executive departments are led by the leader of your legislature. So there's a combination there that we don't have. We have the separation of powers. Can you explain briefly what it takes to get an election called? Who gets to call the election and on under what timetable?
Well, there's a maximum of 5 years between general elections. So we last had a general election in 2019. So there's got to be one in 2024. David Cameron, when he was in coalition with the Liberal Democrats, with Nick Clegg, passed some new legislation suggesting fixed term parliaments, you know, so that we went to a system like yours and had the elections at regular intervals and the Prime Minister couldn't change it. But there were so many loopholes built into that legislation that it became completely meaningless. And it is, in fact, in the gift of the Prime Minister to decide when there is going to be an election. So the Prime Minister can therefore pick and choose any point up to 5 years, can't go beyond 5 years, but at any time up to 5 years, when he's riding high, he or she is riding high in the polls, they can go to the country and seek a fresh mandate. The thing with Sunak is he's running out of time. It reminds me of Jim Callaghan in 1979, when 78, 79, when he really should have gone to the country before the winter of discontent. And had he done so, we might never have had Prime Minister Thatcher. But unfortunately, he waited till the following spring, famously singing a little ditty to the assembled delegates at the Labour Party conference in the autumn of 1978, which went like this: "Can't get away to marry you today. My wife won't let me." And everybody roared with laughter, but that meant he was decided to stay in office. And we had a disastrous winter, and that was the end of that. So now back to your other point. Yes, we have a government that consists of a permanent civil service who often have their own ideas about things, as you can imagine. In America, people call it permanent Washington, the deep state or whatever, government departments whose policy doesn't always change with the color of the government. You know, these people are lifetime civil servants in many cases, working their way up to positions of considerable power, the permanent secretaries, and they have their own way of doing things. And ministers come in who are appointed by the Prime Minister. He gets to pick from amongst his MPs whoever he wants in his cabinet, anything from about 15 to 25 people. He dishes out the jobs, decides what they're all going to focus on. They then go off to their ministries and are invariably completely ignorant about the way the ministry works and indeed the details of the policies being implemented by the previous government or indeed the ones they're being asked to implement themselves. So you end up with a scenario which was hilariously depicted in the TV series Yes Minister, with a hapless Jim Hacker, who was the minister who kept coming to the permanent secretary, played by Nigel Hawthorne, with ideas and policy initiatives, why they should start doing things differently. And this is what the Prime Minister wants. This is what we want to do. And the permanent secretary would invariably be able to completely bamboozle the idiot minister and say, "We can't do that. That's not practical. That won't work. We've never done it that way before. If we do that, that'll be a disaster." So nothing ever changes.
Yeah. Well, speaking of deep state bureaucrats and career politicians, Basil, it seems as though we have international deep state and career politicians doing their various responses to what happened this weekend when Iran responded to Israel's bombing of the embassy there in Syria. What can you tell us? What where are we at today with these events?
That, as your famous television program once said, is the $64,000 question. A few key points. It seems, the word on the street is, that the Iranian attack was very deliberately orchestrated so as not to cause civilian casualties. had they really wanted to do so, they could have done so, of course. And it was telegraphed literally to the United States and allies, and indeed to Israel, 72 hours in advance. They knew what the targets would be. They knew when it was going to start. They knew the type of weaponry that was going to be involved. So that's why they were able to intercept the US with the UK's support. $1.1 billion of your tax dollars spent on that little shenanigan, by the way, on that exercise. They knew exactly what was going to happen. So hence 99% of them were intercepted. The whole thing was really some sort of theatrics. Iran was able to claim that its honor had been salvaged and it had responded and therefore assuaged the angry mobs that tend to gather on the streets of Tehran on these occasions. And the Americans, you know, you lot and the British were able to say, oh, weren't we wonderful? We managed to intercept it all. And that gives Britain and more importantly, the United States more leverage when trying to lean on the Israelis as regards their next move, which is to be hoped, consists of very little at all. I've seen reports tonight that it may be a cyber attack, or that now the Israelis in response do not wish to cause civilian casualties either, if only the same thing could be said about Gaza. But it looks like,
and there's even a there's another party that benefits, of course. You know, Raytheon and all of the defense systems manufacturers get to restock everyone involved. And I want to talk to you about how that might impact the United Kingdom right after these incoming headlines on today's News Talk TNT.
Attention!
Special bulletin! Special bulletin!
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for a maximum restraint amidst escalating tensions in the Middle East, warning that the region is on the brink of a full-scale war following Iran's drone and missile strike on Israel. Former President Donald Trump's legal team has requested a postponement of his Florida classified documents case due to his commitment to a separate trial in New York, where he's accused of falsifying business records during the 2016 presidential campaign.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Basil, one of my uncles was in the Army Air Corps and couldn't make it through flight school because he developed an inner ear problem that gave him tremendous vertigo. So he became a radar operator and was stationed in the Midlands, at those magnificent radar facilities that protected your beautiful island from German bombers, at least giving advance warning so planes could get up. Being an island nation, having situational awareness is critical to your continued security. I saw an interesting article today that suggested, and it was from the United Kingdom, suggesting that Great Britain and Ireland, Northern Ireland, develop an Iron Dome system to protect against incoming missiles. Do you think this is just more propaganda to sell defense systems, or do you think this is something that could actually enhance the security of the United Kingdom?
I mean, there are all sorts of hotheads talking about how Britain needs to prepare for war. The whole country needs to sort of get ready for war. But, you know, personally, I think that all that sort of talk is reckless, idiotic, and ultimately puerile. But nobody has successfully invaded the United Kingdom or England since 1066, nearly 1,000 years. Napoleon couldn't do it. Hitler couldn't do it. And I don't think Vladimir Putin has got any intention of doing it. I mean, this is the key point. There's endless projection onto Putin that he is somehow, you know, seeking expansionism, that unless he's defeated in Ukraine, he will invade the rest of Europe, Eastern Europe first, ending up at the Atlantic, you know, who knows where next. That's total, total nonsense. There's no evidence for that whatsoever. So, you know, I'm old enough to remember the so-called peace dividend of the 1990s, We all thought we were going to be heading in a very different direction, Timothy. So, you know, if you ask me, this synthetic enmity towards China and Russia in particular at the moment is completely the wrong direction. We need a total change in foreign policy. We need to go back to using diplomacy to find common ground and stop making enemies of other countries.
Yeah. Yeah. And getting back to that military industrial complex, we know that our country has sent a lot of aging munitions over to Ukraine to, you know, get rid of them, involve them in this conflict. And of course, we're, you know, starting up new contracts, I'm sure. That's part of the deal. And now we're looking at some of the stuff that came out of Iran. And it looked like, you know, like you said, a lot of notice ahead of time. Notice about when and where and what, and it seemed to be a lot of older munitions. It looked like it was, you know, maybe a little over $1 million, $2 million worth of gear that they flew out to out there, and then about $38 billion was it to intercept all that. I mean, is there potentially something strategic happening here? I agree with you. There's a bit of kabuki theater, geopolitical kabuki theater going on, but. Is there any chance that the Iranians sort of maybe got rid of some of their older munitions to test the Iron Dome system and what kind of air defenses they'd be up against if things do escalate?
I think that's exactly what happened, Hesha. Iran did not use its Fatah hypersonic missiles. Instead, they used a cluster of decoys, a detached warhead with a booster on it, and mid-range ballistic missiles, aging ones coming in behind the first two. So apparently it was all very obvious and all very easy to shoot down, as well as these slow moving drones. Of course, it's been tremendously exaggerated. This is another aspect of the kabuki theater by the likes of David Cameron, you know, trying to scale up what the Iranians did. I mean, we had it on the front pages of the newspapers here in Britain. I saw a jet fighter emblazoned over the front page of the Metro newspaper with the words "fire from the sky," you know. Nothing happened. 1 7-year-old girl was injured. Very unfortunate. Are the Israelis planning on starting World War III because of injuries to one girl? We know they value their casualties much higher than anybody else's. Fire in the sky is what's been happening in Gaza for the last 6 months. 68 people have been killed in the Middle East in the last 72 hours. All of them in Gaza, most of them shot by snipers trying to get back to their homes in the north because they're starving and living in sewage in the south. You know, the whole point of Netanyahu's original strike on the consulate in Damascus was to create a distraction from the worsening catastrophe in Gaza and his and the Israeli government's growing unpopularity around the world, including in Washington, London, Brussels, and everywhere else. And he succeeded in doing so because all the oxygen in the room has been taken up by talk about Iran's retaliation and now what happens next. And once again, the suffering of the people in Palestine is sidelined.
And I think you're absolutely correct about Putin having no intention whatsoever to invade Western Europe and try to reestablish Catherine the Great's Russian Empire. In fact, I saw an article in your newspapers today that the number one group of what Washington has taken to calling newcomers are actually Vietnamese. There are more Vietnamese entering via the channel than any other group. Is there a discussion and hand in the United Kingdom over these economic invaders? They're people that they're not looking for political asylum. They violate all the laws of asylum, which is that you have to seek asylum in the first safe country to your conflict strewn country. Of course, Vietnam isn't in conflict now. These people are clearly just seeking to benefit from your economic social welfare system. Is there talk in the United Kingdom of restricting this illegal immigration?
Well, I mean, we've got this whole Rwanda deportation bill going through Parliament. I mean, I think we should do a bit more to stop them arriving in the first place. 750 people arrived by boat this weekend alone. It's very windy out there now. I shouldn't think there are too many attempting the crossing tonight. But if we have calm weather in the summer, then yes, as is the case with the southern border of the United States, they come from all over the world to come to, you know, the rich pastures of North America and Northwest Europe and Britain in particular, because we speak the universal language, and just about every nationality in the world has a pre-existing community here in the UK, as it does in the United States. That's one of the things that attracts immigrants. If there are already Vietnamese people in the country, then of course the new arrivals feel at home amongst the fellow Vietnamese, and you end up with the creation of the ghettos. Same applies in the United States. There's every nationality under the sun in the United States, so everybody feels at home. You know, on the one hand, that might be a good thing if immigration was managed to controlled, but the, you know, where we are at the moment is a recipe for chaos. So the Conservative government came up with a plan to deport people to, of all places, Rwanda. Yes, tiny country in sub-Saharan Africa. And that their asylum requests would be processed there rather than us paying to put them up in hotels all over Britain. But it turns out the cost of that is £1.8 million. So, you know, $2.5 million per deportee, $2.5 million per individual. What? So you can't, you know, you say you can't.
Basil Bryant, we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. But clearly, the three of us are in the wrong business. I'd do it. I'd do it for half that much, Basil, as I'm sure you would, too. Thanks so much for your great insight, as always. Can't wait to have you back at State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're traveling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
The next time you think you can illegally handle your mobile phone while driving and get away with it, think again. Phone detection cameras are in operation on New South Wales roads.
Hello?
So if you're driving and illegally handle your mobile phone, you can stop it or cop it.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Here at State of the Nation, Timothy and I and many of our guests have been looking at election integrity, really trying to continuously have a grip on that, because there's so many vectors, so many threat vectors as it pertains to election integrity here in this country. And joining us now is our friend. He's an expert on this stuff. He's a broadcaster. He's been an auditor in a previous life. He knows about these things. He's also written 3 books on it. JoeHoft.com is his website. Joe Hoft is his name. Joe, it's great to see you. Welcome to State of the Nation.
Hey, great to see you guys.
Happy to be here. Really glad to have you, man. It's been a minute. Good to see you. So, you know, Timothy and I were talking about this whole Dominion thing, some of the stuff that's come out recently, you know, new information about their Serbian servers and some of the, employees they've had in Serbia, how in Serbia it's illegal to do background checks on people. Of course, corporate headquarters in Canada, they've sued Fox. You know, Fox had to settle for this unholy amount of money. And as it turns out, just like we've talked about before, this company is shady, super shady. Are you tracking any updates on this or any thoughts on that you want to share with us?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for asking, and thanks for having me on. This was kind of the dilemma during the election, after the election, and then up till this day. The problem was that there was this big beast called Dominion, and if you said anything bad about them, they were threatening to sue you. As a matter of fact, I was threatened to be sued, Jim and I. And there's a long story there. I could tell you a crazy story there, but we were actually, I'll tell you this, we were set up. We were set up. Nobody, I've never shared this on the air before. We were set up. Some guy had sent us some videos, wanted us to put these videos up. There was some damaging information about Dominion in the videos. And we put out a teaser this guy sent me. We had a hit, then he was going to send us five videos. We had one, and we were ready to put it up. We ran it by, though, a couple guys that we knew just to vet it, and they found that one of these pictures was from 2-3 years ago. Basically, and once you find something like that, then you're like, oh, this whole thing's garbage. And we never put it up. That same day that we were supposed to put it up, we get a letter from Dominion stating that to watch out, we're coming after you, save all your documents, we're going to sue you. So fortunately, we never put that piece up. So that's how sinister this whole operation's been. Isn't that something? They are targeting us and going after us and not wanting us to put this stuff up because there's so much garbage about all the systems. They are so dysfunctional. And Tim, I'm sorry to interrupt, but man, they are so broken. There's no way we should be using these things. Somehow over the last 20 years, they've slowly crept into our election process. And now here we are 20 years later, we got these systems that are in place that are garbage, that they are not secure. And that here's what I ended up doing in my book, talking about the systems. I just used Halderman's report from Georgia, where he says it, and the CISA, the government entity, said it as well, confirmed Halderman's report, that the Dominion system used throughout Georgia was not secure, that a bad actor could hack into it relatively easily, and a bad actor could flip an election. That's coming from the government. So that's what I ended up sticking with, which is safe. And so all this information, Brian, about is Serbia involved, and all that. It really, yes, it may be, maybe not. And there's a bunch of concerns with all that. Ultimately, it doesn't even matter. The facts are these systems are not secure. And from an IT auditor standpoint and a corporate auditor standpoint, the fact that we're using systems in anything in this company, in this country, in this government, is that's enough. That, in a corporate world, if a system's not secure, you should throw it out. You shut it down right now. You cannot afford to have malware inserted into your entire network. You can't afford to have somebody stealing all your personal information. You shut it down. But in our election systems, Georgia's wanting to use the same system in less than a year now. So that's the crime. That's the shocker. This thing should never be used.
No, of course they shouldn't be used. And if I were in Congress, the first expert witness I would call would be Elizabeth Warren. And then I'd call all the other Democrats that were saying that these systems weren't secure back in 2008, 2010, 2012, and through there. And now they've changed their tune because it's politically expedient for them. They wouldn't have their stumble bum Joe if it weren't for these systems. I have a friend who is like you, a corporate auditor in a past life, and she started New Hampshire Voter Integrity Group because of the crooked election in Windham. And then they found out there were messed up elections throughout New Hampshire. We've even had a Democrat get zero votes in her precinct. And she said, yeah, I know I voted for myself. So she demanded a recount. And Joe, she didn't finish third. She won that election. So even Democrats realize that these machines are garbage. You're absolutely right. They need to be scrapped. Where is the will to do this going to come from?
Well, I think a big tactic then that they've been using is to scare the hell out of anybody that wants to say anything. Like, you know, like I said, there's all sorts of, they're even, you know, inserting information to steal this. Why Fox News ever settled is beyond me. I think we all scratched our heads on that one, more than scratched our heads. It looks, there's something going on there. There was no reason for them to settle. They had a great case. They didn't wait for the Halderman, the recent Halderman report to come out. So what were they thinking? Who was thinking for them? There's obviously something more there, but the whole effort was to scare us and prevent us from sharing the truth about this. I think David Clements has got a great movie out there called Let My People Go, where he throws a lot of this out. And here's the thing, guys, the thing that's really scary about the systems overall is that I think Dominion is almost it's almost a relic. It's almost a dinosaur now. They've got new systems coming out. These B-Pro, No Ink are the companies that push these things. They're pushing these poll pads. They're bragging about doing it. These poll pads are obviously connected to the net. How else can you tell if somebody already voted? When somebody walks into a center and they sign on to a poll pad now, they're able then real time to see who's voting. And they know probably from people's patterns which way they're going to vote. And they can tell right away where you're at an election. They sell a module now, these systems do, that to a prospective, I guess, candidate or whoever, it'll tell you where you stand in the election based on election night data. So, and then they've got print-on-demand modules, and they've got voter roll management modules. You could add somebody to a voter roll, then print out a ballot, apply it to them, delete the person from a voter roll all in a matter of minutes, and nobody would even know. And all of a sudden you got a bunch of ballots sitting in the sitting in your bin there that you've already printed out. So this is the technology they have now. They've advanced this, and this is the thing. And everybody's sitting back thinking, we're just going to, you know, Trump's going to crush him, which he is. He crushed him in 2020. So we've got, you know, but it's really, really scary how corrupt these people are. And then we're seeing it today. Here's, you know, the thing that I've been thinking about all day is, well, these guys are going to steal an election. Of course they will. They'll monkey with a jury pool. You can bet that. They'll get a judge in there that's corrupt, whose daughter's making millions of dollars. They'll get a Soros-backed DA to put in place some sort of crimes against the former president. And the guy who they
I wanted
stole
to talk to you about
from.
That, Joe. Yeah, because I'm in upstate New York. I'm a lifelong New Yorker. And the way it works in New York State is criminal defendants get first priority if they're in pretrial detention. Okay, so if they're in jail awaiting trial, their cases go first. And then come the violent criminals that might be out on parole before trial. They get second priority. Nonviolent alleged felons with no jail time are never tried. They're still working through the COVID backlog. They're trying cases now in most courts in New York from 2021, 2022. For this case to jump the line and all of a sudden have to be done so quickly, it just shows how this is just simply a political persecution. And it's designed to harass him. It's designed to physically and mentally fatigue him, forcing him to sit there in court for 8 hours a day. And I asked the question to a previous guest. I'll ask it of you. Should he defy the judge's order and attend Barron's high school graduation? Call the judge's bluff, who said he's going to throw him in jail? Or should he show respect for the system and comply? I know what I would do. Pretty sure I know what you would do. What do you think Donald Trump's going to do?
This is how evil these people are. They ever say, even with the Mueller gang, they'd set him up in a situation where it was almost no win, you know? And so these people aren't dumb. They're clever, but they're cleverly evil and cunning and baffling and really have a lot of power now. I don't know the answer to that. I'm outraged by this. I think American people, where is a good judge? Where's the Supreme Court in New York? Is it totally, you know, gone? I mean, is there not a fair judge in all of New York anymore? I mean, what is going on? Why aren't people speaking up about this? It's so outrageous. I was on the War Room about a week and a half ago. I put this piece together where I'm saying, hey, if from an accounting standpoint, this case makes no sense. Like you said, Tim, you'd have to, here's the thing, just being charged with 34 felonies. Oh, that sounds horrible. What he's being charged for, 11 of those felonies is that he opened up an invoice. And so he received an invoice in the mail and opened it up. So who in the hell do you know that has any control over their mail that can say, I can tell you when mail's coming to my house and I'm going to open it, and that's a felony. It's insane. That's insane. Another 12 felonies, they call them felonies, are that he then entered an entry into his books after receiving these invoices. That is absolutely the perfect thing to do as an accountant. Whenever you receive a liability, you book it immediately. That's U.S. GAAP standards. So that's not a crime, but they're saying 12 of those entries, and they say President Trump made those entries. And this is the thing, a CEO of a multi-billion dollar corporation is not going to make entries into any books. You know what I mean? I didn't make entries into books when I oversaw a $1 billion block of business. No way is a CEO doing it. Nobody's ever done that. The third felony that they say, another 11 of these felonies, are that he sent or cut a check. I mean, this is the basis behind this. All statutorily, way overdue. The statutory limits were gone 5 years ago. These events occurred in 2017 after he'd handed the business over to his sons. And Bragg is saying, literally in this case, he says, these entries that were made in 2017 impacted the 2016 election. Now, how the hell does that happen? You know what I mean? It's laughable how bad this is. And yet they're pushing it. And the most disgusting thing is our media just running with it. They love to share the story about any girl that Trump's ever been with. And we don't even know that Trump they both deny there ever was an affair. I think he had a picture taken with Stormy Daniels once. You know, celebrities like Trump get pictures taken with a lot of people. I think the whole thing's garbage. And these nasty guys behind the scenes are laughing about it. Ha, ha, ha. He's going to miss his son's high school graduation, and we got him good. I mean, who thinks that way? You know what I mean? Who's so sinister and sick that they're even thinking that way? By the way, one guy who was there today was Norm Eisen, Barack Obama's, they call him his ethics czar. The guy's a snake. He was behind every single attempt and effort against Trump while he was president. No doubt he was behind the 2020 election, and here he is sitting in the back of that courtroom today with that Conway guy, former husband of Conway, Trump's campaign manager. You just it's just so disgusting, you can't make it up.
Yeah, the public victory laps and the humiliative placements of, you know, news commentary and people like that, it almost feels inorganic to me, Joe. It feels like it's meant to upset people in the country. It's meant to make people, just burn out on the stress of it all. It's just like, how can this be happening day after day after day? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think there's sort of I always refer to it as a ritual humiliation factor, or is it just plain hubris?
No, I've heard that. Somebody was sharing this with me, you know, some time ago about this is the communist way. This is what they do. They demoralize you. They put buffoons in there as your leaders, like Joe Biden. They can't even talk and walk. Can't get out of bed and make it to the bathroom by himself. We all know that in the middle of the night. The guy's a 70 or 80 year old buffoon that can't talk, mumbles, can't walk. And this is what they do to us. This is what the communist regimes do. They demoralize you with everything. And they want you to act up so they can come in and kill you, basically. And then we're seeing it with these January 6th people. Outrageous stuff going on. And a lady last week was indicted. She's 70 years old. She walked in the Capitol, prayed, and left. And she's now facing a year in prison. I mean, and I just talked to somebody today about one girl that's sitting in prison, and they are torturing these people in prison. Maybe not literally whipping them, but like they'll take them out and put them in cages in the rain and then bring them in and not give them clean and dry clothing. This is the kind of stuff that they're doing to these people. And Americans better wake up. I think that's the thing. Time to wake up. We need more shows like this to get the truth out, because this stuff's it is sickening what's happening.
Yeah, it really is, Joe. JoeHoff.com is the website. Joe, you probably saw Alex Jones respond. We're just about out of time. We won't have time to respond to this. But you probably saw Alex Jones talking about that leaked FBI, CIA guy saying, ha-ha, see, we are weaponized. Yeah. We took his legs out from under him, pretty much. Absolutely insane to see this stuff going wide. Joe Hoff, thanks so much. JoeHoff.com is the website. Joe, we'll look forward to having you back on again real soon, all right?
Yeah, thanks, guys. You look great. Appreciate it.
Hey. Great to have you. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk. Don't go anywhere. We got more State of the Nation coming up after these words from TNT.